Hello and welcome to my latest podcast episode. So if any of you have listened to my podcast episodes before, then you'll be aware that the concept I work with is always inviting a guest speaker along to have a little bit of a chat with me about an element of antisocial behaviour or some kind of associated topic. And sometimes it can be a little bit of a struggle to think of a subject matter. And for this episode, I really wanted to do something around the Public Status Protection Order, so the PSPO, tool found in the ASD Crime and Policing Act of 2014. And I think fair to say, one of the tools in the Act that has probably been the most controversial, one of the tools that has probably had the most opinion pieces written about it, and one of the tools that's probably attracted quite a lot of criticism. And yet it's something that's used quite regularly by local authorities as a way of tackling kind of place-based antisocial behaviour. So I was having a bit of a think about who I could get along to speak about public spaces protection orders, and I decided to invite Ben Archer, who is a PhD student who is particularly looking at the PSPO at the moment. And I wanted to invite him along to talk a little bit about his research and some of the things that he's finding and some of the things that perhaps he's looking to uncover. So I think I'm at risk of stealing your thunder, Ben, if I say any more. So without further ado, I think I'll throw it over to you and just ask you if you could just introduce yourself in a little more detail and tell me a little bit more about your role.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for having me today, Janine. So as you said, my name is Ben Archer and I'm a research student at Sheffield Hallam University. I'm based in the Department of Law and Criminology. And as you stated, I'm currently completing a PhD, so doctoral research, examining the introduction of public spaces protection orders or PSPOs by local authorities. So my role really is a prolonged time spending some time doing some research, looking at the PSPO as a tool and trying to add to the conversation around the PSPO from an academic perspective.
Fantastic. I'm aware that there's going to be a lot of listeners who are very aware of what the PSPO is. You know, perhaps they've had some involvement in implementing PSPOs or enforcing PSPOs. But I'm also conscious that there might also be people who have joined us because they're interested in finding out more. So perhaps they've heard of the PSPO, but don't really know what it means. So I wonder, as just a starter question, if you could just give me a little bit more detail about what the PSPO is and what the intention of government was when it was introduced.
Yes, definitely. So as you stated, the PSPO was introduced through the Antisocial Behaviour, Crime and Policing Act 2014. And it was really as a result of the coalition government's overhaul of antisocial behaviour and the legislation and measures to tackle that. Prior to that, there was 19 antisocial behaviour powers that existed, and these were condensed to 6 new powers, including the PSPO. So examples of previous powers that listeners might be aware of that have become amalgamated into the PSPO include dog control orders, designated public place orders, and gating orders. So in effect, PSPOs are introduced by a local authority against a designated public space. So whereas previous measures were introduced against individuals, people are generally aware of the ASBO, which was introduced against an individual, PSPO is introduced against a space and active for all users against the space. Within this, there's prohibitions and requirements, which all people who enter the space must abide by. An example of a prohibition could be prohibiting the consumption of alcohol within the space, or a requirement could be picking up after your dog, more proactive steps that need to be taken by people who use the space and requiring them to do something. The statutory criteria for introducing a PSPO and their associated requirements and prohibitions is that the antisocial behaviour experienced has a detrimental effect on the quality of life of others and is likely to be ongoing. So this is a two-stage test that local authorities need to follow when introducing a PSPO. And they're given a wide scope of freedom when introducing a PSPO to introduce any prohibition or requirement that they deem to be necessary so long as they justify it as meeting the two stage criteria and they conduct necessary consultation, which the statute outlines quite broadly. For anyone who is within the PSPO zone and breaches either the requirements or prohibitions, there's two statutory punishments available. This is either a fixed penalty notice of up to £100 issued on the spot, or a fine of up to £1,000 if convicted of a summary conviction. So they are quite harsh punishments for prohibitions and requirements that may not be criminal in their nature, such as picking up after dog mess or consumption of alcohol.
Yeah, and I think, so my next question is around picking up a little bit more on why these have been so controversial. And I think through that answer that you just gave so comprehensively, there was a few things there that started to kind of point towards why these things are quite controversial. I mean, you mentioned there about some of the things that the order can stop people from doing are things that wouldn't ordinarily be a crime or something that is against the law. So, you know, a classic example there, you said about not drinking alcohol in public. Well, obviously, that's not something that's against the law ordinarily. I think you also mentioned there about the fact that local authorities have a huge amount of discretion when it comes to PSPOs, and it's not something that an independent person has to sign off in a kind of judicial role. It doesn't go to court, you don't have to prove a case to a judge, so there isn't that independent scrutiny that we see with other legal orders that we use. And as you say, that the sanctions there are quite strong, you know, there's quite a strong deterrent in terms of some quite hefty fines should it go that way. Talking about controversy, are there any particular examples of PSPOs that you've seen that really have kind of hit the media quite hard, or where kind of lobbying groups have been particularly concerned about the use? Have you any examples that you've got to share at all, Ben?
There's been quite a lot in the media about PSPOs, and lots of it seemingly has been negative throughout the media discourse. And you're correct in saying PSPOs have been considered controversial in their nature. And as you said, because of the two-stage criteria for introducing a PSPO, it means that there's lots of things that could be classed as a prohibition or requirement. So, for example, one PSPO that received a lot of media attention was regarding prohibiting swearing within the public space. So anyone who was caught swearing could face either of the punishments I outlined earlier, which seems a bit confusing that swearing would be put on the same level as something that was perhaps criminal in its nature and put on the PSPO as a prohibition and requirement. So there's issues surrounding thinning the mesh with regards to criminal and non-criminal acts and punishing people for things such as swearing within the public space. There's also the negative media perception about introducing prohibitions regarding homeless people, and the belief that PSPOs have been used to target homeless people. So there's prohibitions preventing begging, or there's been prohibitions preventing people from carrying articles associated with being homeless, so bedding, things like that, and that's received a really wide discourse in the media, and petitions against proposed PSPOs that are proposing to introduce conditions like that. Another controversial element regards the consultation. So the consultation in the statute only lists a few key people to consult with for a local authority. And following that, the local authority is given a broad scope to consult widely with whoever they deem necessary. Part of all of this broad nature of the PSPO derives from the idea of localism. So the coalition government were very keen to introduce localism as a concept for local authorities and government, so that local authorities can deal with local issues without having much government oversight. So that's why PSPOs are introduced without the judicial system that you outlined and being signed off. They're left to the local authorities to deal with the problems themselves. And kind of justified in that a local authority knows what's best for their area rather than government in the Houses of Commons or the courts or anything like that. So the consultation, there's been instances of invite-only consultations being held and closed questions, so whatever you answer, it kind of makes the PSPO seem like it's necessary. There's a lot of mysticism around the consultation because each local authority is able to do it differently. So each local authority is different. So it's hard to kind of create a playing field of what should a consultation hold. And I think there's the scope for the consultation to be explored further. Another controversial element regarding the enforcement of the PSPO and that's been in the media is the enforcement by private security firms and the potential that has for incentivization. So it could be that if you hire a third party, do they receive a profit for each PSPO ticket they issue? Does that cause an issue of issuing tickets unfairly because they want to get the profit? So there's lots of controversial elements, but I think a large part of the controversy perhaps comes from the mysticism around the PSPO and the general public awareness not being there for the PSPO as it has perhaps been for previous measures. So I'm hoping that my research will help demystify this PSPO for the local authorities' benefit alongside the general public benefit and kind of open a discussion about these controversial elements.
Definitely. And I think one of the things we've discussed, haven't we, Ben, is about how we can perhaps take your research findings and kind of translate them into some practitioner guidance. So listeners might not be aware that I chair the West Midlands Local Authority ASB group. And I know the group are quite keen for you to involve you, Ben, in as I say, using some of that research to help shape some good practice guidance that can perhaps give areas a bit more support around what that consultation process looks like.
Yes, definitely. I think there's definitely the potential for my research to benefit practitioners and the general public because of localism and because of the way people work, they're not speaking to other local authorities asking how they introduced a PSPO. So I think just collecting anecdotal evidence, analysing it, will help not create a one-size-fits-all model, because I do acknowledge that localism is a key part of the PSPO and each local authority is different. But just speaking to different, just reading about what different areas have done, perhaps could highlight methods that perhaps have not been considered previously by practitioners. And I'm hoping that it will be beneficial to practitioners going forward.
Absolutely. And we talked a bit here about localism, and I think it's fair to say that there have been a couple of challenges against PSPOs. But my understanding is in all of those cases, the decision has really been backing up the idea that it's down to local councils. So my understanding is that these judgments have basically said that, you know, the courts are reluctant to fetter the discretion of the local areas in terms of PSPOs. Is that your understanding as well, Ben?
Yes. So there's only been a few cases challenging a PSPO, one quite recently, actually. And the challenges to a PSPO are limited and can only be brought on two conditions, namely the local authority acted ultra vires or did not follow the statute in creating or altering a PSPO. So if we're talking about localism, this is kind of central government saying we only come in these instances, we're not going to interfere more than necessary. So the two cases that are the oldest, both of these took place in London. One concerned a buffer zone between a medical clinic and protesters, and the other was a PSPO limiting the number of dogs in a park. In the first case, it was found that it was a breach of Article 8, so the right to a private and family life, and in the latter, it was held that prohibiting more than four dogs was reasonable given the powers available to a local authority through a PSPO. So the judges and the courts in these cases said that the detrimental effect was not targeted to target all public space users, but the broad nature of statute allowed for discretion to be used by local authorities when they're introducing a PSPO. So these cases have really reinforced the localist nature of the PSPO and how a local authority is able to introduce a PSPO with conditions such as this. The most recent case, and I need to do a bit more reading on this, but my general understanding is an individual was issued a fixed penalty notice for drinking a fizzy drink that the enforcement officers believed to be alcohol. So a ticket was issued, and on the first instance, the ticket was dismissed and compared to a parking ticket. So if you receive a parking ticket and you can prove you paid or you can prove that you shouldn't have been issued it, the ticket was removed. So following that logic, the FPM was removed. However, when the local authority appealed it further, that decision was reversed, and it was, I believe the court said there was no way that the enforcement officer could not tell it wasn't alcohol unless he drank it. Unless they drank it themselves. So it's the reasonable belief that the individual was consuming alcohol, even though it turned out they wasn't. Because there was the reasonable belief, that was enough to keep the ticket in place. Please correct me if I'm wrong about that case.
No, you're right. And I was just thinking, Kuljit Bogle from Cornerstone Barristers has done some amazing kind of analytical work and opinion pieces on all of the cases that you've just referenced, actually. So I think she's also done a couple of video presentations about the PSPO, which mentions some of those cases. And she also did a recent article. I think it was Orange Aid or something that was in the, that was like masquerading as alcohol. So yeah, if readers are interested in like kind of learning more details about any of those cases, then I would absolutely direct you to Kuljit's work, which can be found on Cornerstone Barristers' web page, because she really is kind of at the forefront of understanding the legal principles and cases around the PSPO.
No,
she's a very often my point of contact for anything PSPO related.
I definitely agree. Anyone interested, make sure you read those articles to get a more detailed explanation of the cases than I've managed to give here.
Hey, look, we're all going to want to do. Pulled it to the kind of intricacies of the legal elements, I think. Ben, one of the other areas that I kind of anecdotally hear about as being a possible area of controversy is this kind of idea that a local authority might bring in a PSPO to address the behaviour of only a couple of people. And obviously, because the PSPO applies to a whole area, it governs the behaviour of everybody in that area. And therefore, is it fair that everybody has to abide by rules that essentially have been brought in to try and address just one or two people's behaviours? And I think it's interesting what you were saying about swearing, because I think anyone that knows me knows that I'm a little bit guilty of swearing sometimes. So certainly if I was in an area with a PSPO around swearing, I might be at a very high risk of an FPM. I just wondered whether you had any thoughts on that and whether you'd come across any situations where that was happening, or whether that's just something that people saw as being a concern that hasn't actually come to fruition.
I suppose it's kind of thinking about punishing the majority for the actions of a few. It kind of feels like when you were at school and the teacher would threaten to keep you all in for detention because one child was playing up, and it's kind of like you kind of felt that you were being treated unfairly. So I think it has the potential to be considered in that way. I think there's other measures that can be used to tackle individual problems, and I would like to think that a local authority would introduce, would use their other measures under the 2014 statute to deal with more individual problems, or where they know the specific individuals conducting that kind of behaviour. It's tricky because the PSPO, in a sense, it also acts symbolically in its nature. So because the local authorities required to put up signs, so there'll be big metal signs in the PSPO area. It kind of acts more symbolically, even though it may only be targeting a few people, than a individual measure that doesn't get publicised as much would do. Addressing So the way I would hope, I would like to hope that it, if it is introduced, it is for a problem that's affecting a lot of people, and not neighbourly disputes or individual disputes, because there's more appropriate measures to tackle that. And I think the local authority may be hard pressed to meet the detrimental effect if it's only a few individuals that are being affected by the behaviour committed.
I think I agree. I think the problem in practice that some local authorities have is that because PSPOs have got more media attention, then kind of elected members, politicians are putting the pressure on for them to perhaps be using the PSPO, even in situations where, as an informed and knowledgeable practitioner, you know that it's probably not the best tool. So I think, and I certainly, I mean, I used to manage a local authority team prior to the 2014 Act. And used to be responsible for gating orders. And I had to have a pretty strong backbone to be able to resist some of the pressure that was put on me to be putting gating orders into situations that probably weren't appropriate. So I think there is probably a need to educate some of our elected members about the range of the tools in the toolkit available, and that the PSPO is not the kind of be all and end all in terms of dealing with ASB.
No, definitely. I definitely agree. And as I said, people may be quick to introduce a PSPO because the media attention and the sign, it's a big publicity. It makes people aware. Mm-hmm. But I would hope that they consider what's more appropriate rather than what will get the most awareness to deal with the problem they've got in front of them.
Sorry, that's my cynical local authority side coming out there. I think more, I guess more for me as well, is kind of what happens. So a PSPO is in place and you have some individuals that are perhaps breaching the PSPO on a number of occasions. And I think that's where it's really important that areas have an understanding of how the PSPO fits in with the other tools and powers. So if somebody is constantly receiving FPNs for, you know, I don't know, drinking in public or being abusive in public, then perhaps actually that individual needs something else, like, I don't know, a community protection notice or an injunction that deals with their particular behaviour, because clearly the PSPO isn't having the effect that it's that is required. And I think that's not just from an enforcement side, but also from a kind of support and intervention side. And I know one of the things that I've been quite interested in when I've been speaking to people about the PSPO is if they are looking at using it to tackle issues that are associated with alcohol consumption or issues associated with homelessness or issues where there might be mental health concerns linked, then actually what's the support? Because we know if we're just constantly issuing FPNs, we're probably not dealing with the root cause. So I think one of the things that I encourage is about making sure that the use of the PSPO is part of a bigger, it's kind of one jigsaw piece of a bigger jigsaw puzzle, essentially.
No, I definitely agree with that. And I always question whether central government, when they created the PSPO, thought of it as being the whole jigsaw rather than one piece of a time. One tiny piece of a big jigsaw. As you say, if people are being constantly issued FPNs for breaching the PSPO, then that suggests it isn't perhaps as effective as it should be. That's something supported by the literature for previous measures, which talk about being issued a ticket doesn't cease behaviour in the way that perhaps it's intended to. So I would like to think that support measures are being offered, diversionary techniques to stop rather than constantly issuing FPNs when it's not being effective for the individual.
Have you come across any examples of that at all?
Just trying to think. I think there's a frustration with local authorities about the symbolism of the PSPO, that offering support for individuals isn't the same publicity. You can't talk about support that you've issued to individuals. So I think people are, so when media articles are published about certain prohibitions and requirements, I think local authorities get frustrated that they're doing all this other stuff that they can't talk about. So people will presume that the first instance was to punish the individual, when perhaps there's been different measures taken first that can't receive the same level of publication for data confidentiality and things like that. So I'd like to hope that support is offered as a first port of call rather than punishing individuals through an FPN. And I'd like more clarity in the guidance perhaps for that. I don't know if you'd agree. Mm-hmm. I'd perhaps like the guidance in the statute to be more clear about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a missed opportunity. Obviously we live in times where support is quite hard to come by and we've had resources cut quite heavily. And I mean, we're talking kind of towards, well, we're talking to each other still while we're being hit by the pandemic. And I guess the view of everybody is that potentially public sector is going to be cut even more in terms of finances. So, you know, we have to live in the real world that there isn't as much support available. But I agree that we need to try and seek out support where it does still exist, because otherwise it's just a bit of a sticky plaster. And I think you're absolutely right. I think the statutory guidance that accompanies the ASB Act 2014 is probably a great place for there to be some pointers around making sure that the PSPO is implemented with a view to support as well as to enforcement. So, yeah, maybe something to campaign the Home Office on. Hopefully we can use your research as a bit of a leverage for that as well.
No
pressure.
Hopefully. And if it can help practice prior to that to bridge the gap and then hopefully some change in the guidance, that'd be great. I just think the more guidance that's out there, the better, because the more information you have, the more prepared you are for introducing a PSPO.
Absolutely. So I think we've focused quite heavily on kind of what a PSPO is and some of the uses and some of the early observations. I'm just kind of keen to go back to your specific research a little bit more. So can you tell me a little bit more about why Sheffield Hallam Uni decided to fund this PhD? And my limited understanding of PhDs is it's quite uncommon for the kind of subject matter to already be chosen. Usually the student would kind of be the one that decides on what the PhD looks at. So, yeah, I'm just interested to know a little bit more about why Sheffield Hallam may offered this opportunity and why this particular subject matter was attractive to them.
Yes, definitely. You're definitely right in that it's uncommon for a PhD to be already pre-chosen for the individual. So my supervision team is comprised of three individuals who have worked in and around this area. So my director of studies, Dr. Vicky Heap, her PhD focused on antisocial behaviour and things like that. So Vicky and her colleague and my other supervisor, Dr. Jill Dickinson, they wrote a paper about PSPOs, more of a commentary piece talking about PSPOs and the issues that they present. And I think by the end of that, they kind of had the idea that there was the opportunity for some large scale research to be conducted on this. So I think it was funded because it's a unique area. There's not been much academic commentary surrounding it, and it meets their research interests. And it's also very topical because the PSPOs, they're seemingly constantly in the media. And I think that selecting the area was something to bring someone on, so there was a structure of what the PhD could be on, because otherwise, because there's not really the awareness of the PSPO, someone might not realize that it's a thing to even do the research on. So having it set out, I can say prior to reading the and preparing for the interview, I had no idea what a PSPO was, so it's really educated me. So I think whilst it's weird, I think it's been a great opportunity to come on something with a team who have the knowledge about it and have done research previously about it. What really attracted me to it was once I started preparing for the interview and things like that, I became really interested in antisocial behaviour and the PSPO as a tool. I was born in 1996, so I'm only in my relative early 20s. So antisocial behaviour has been a big part of my life, even though I've not committed any antisocial behaviour or been punished. It's kind of been all around me in the media, in the narrative around it. And I didn't realise that antisocial behaviour was something that was introduced in 1998 as a statutory term. So it kind of I thought it was interesting that my perception of this that's always existed was something that's kind of emerged over time as something that needs tackling through measures. So I became really interested in the PSPO as a tool. I could see myself spending 3 years, which is how long the PhD is, researching the PSPO and trying to understand a better knowledge of what it is as a tool and how it's used.
Fantastic. And tell us a little bit more about what your research is specifically focusing on.
So my research, at the moment, it is focused on the introduction and implementation of a PSPO. So I kind of focused on thinking about a timeline of research. What would be the first thing that you would look at if you were researching PSPOs as no one else had done at that time? So I kind of thought it makes sense to look at how a PSPO is introduced, and the processes used for doing that and why it's introduced and all things like that. So a real procedural discussion and evaluation of PSPOs. So my research is focusing on understanding the evidential threshold. So what is the detrimental effect used to warrant the need for a PSPO to be introduced? So how does a local authority decide that the antisocial behaviour they're encountering is sufficient enough to introduce a PSPO? So touching upon what we discussed earlier about being introduced for individual disputes, how do they approach deciding, this is a PSPO situation, or how did they decide we're going to tackle this with another measure? I'm also wanting to explore the consultation. So as we touched upon, understanding how the consultation takes place. So a local authority, so there's more clarity as to how a local authority consults on a PSPO, and also understanding the prohibitions and requirements, how they're introduced, why certain ones are introduced, why they're worded in a particular way, and also how they are enforced. So talking about multiple instances like we touched upon earlier, how the PSPO is enforced, who does the enforcement, and how do you maintain a sufficient level of enforcement for an order that's effective for a wide geographical space 24/7? Do you do a lot of CCTV and go back reactively rather than proactively? All things like that. So it's really kind of looking at the PSPO up and just beyond the point of introduction to try and see what the processes are and to help demystify the PSPO. So this is being done by semi-structured interviews with local authority members, so people who work in introducing a PSPO, and the interviews consist of discussing their experience of introducing the PSPO, what processes were used, why processes were used, and kind of looking back in hindsight as to what they did, why they did it, and how they feel it went, to hopefully it's beneficial for the participants as well to allow them to think back, because the way the world works, everyone's so fast paced in their work, probably don't get much time to think back about why you did something and think about how you did it until the time that the PSPO needs to be renewed comes back. So it's really about conducting the interviews, trying to get individuals to talk about their experiences and how they went about introducing a PSPO. So kind of adding a little piece to the jigsaw so that a local authority member can read my research and say, oh, this is how someone else has done it. And a member of the public could read it and say, this is how the PSPO came about. It didn't just come out of thin air. There was a long process to do it, and this is how it was done.
It sounds like your research is going to be really, really valuable for any practitioners and really help to inform kind of what practitioners do and what's best practice, and hopefully also facilitate some sharing of learning, sharing of challenges, sharing of solutions, etc. You mentioned about the fact that you've been carrying out some interviews. Is there any, or if the listeners are kind of thinking, oh, this sounds fantastic and I'd really help like to shape the outcome of the research, be involved, is there any opportunity for people to still be involved with some of the activities that you're doing?
Yes, there is definitely opportunity to be involved, and I'm just about, as everyone else has been, the pandemic's put a bit of a spanner in the works to everyone's working timeline, so I've taken a bit of time out from collecting data, but I'm just about ready to start going back out there again. So if you would like to speak to me about the research for an informal conversation, please feel free to contact me by my email address, which I'm sure Janine will attach to her emailing list and to this podcast. We can have an informal discussion about the research, what it entails, and I've got a few documents, an information sheet and a consent form that you can look over. Following this, if you'd like to participate, because of the pandemic, it would just be a telephone interview talking about your experiences, talking about the PSPO and all the case study areas that are used, and all the participants will be anonymous. So the PSPOs will be anonymized, the area will be, and the participant will be given their generalized job role. So there won't be any identification of individuals. All this is explained on an information sheet I've got that's much clearer than me speaking right now, so I apologise.
So just to kind of respond to what you said, I will absolutely make sure that your contact details are shared widely along with this podcast episode. I think it's just really to reiterate the point that you made about the fact that the cases are anonymised. So if anyone is a bit concerned about, you know, talking about specific cases, that should be covered in terms of the way you're going about this, I think.
Yes, so it's all anonymized. You, as I said, your job role will be generalized. And it's just about helping practice rather than identifying people. And obviously, everything will be anonymized when it's transcribed and things like that. And obviously it's a really stressful time at the moment, so I really appreciate anyone's time if they'd be willing to help and participate and help practice. And hopefully, as I've said previously, anyone who participates will hopefully get something out of it too, so helping them think back and in hindsight as to what they've done, and to look back and think and help their own practice going forward.
Yeah, it sounds a really great opportunity. I know when we've spoken before, one of the things that you've mentioned is that you've kind of been creating a bit of a database. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you've been doing in relation to that?
Yes, definitely. So the Home Office doesn't require local authorities to send any information about PSPOs to them. So when I got to about this time last year, I thought there'd be a nice database of PSPOs. So I could just use that, find my case study areas, my sampling. And I quickly realised that that wasn't the case. So I went about setting my own database. So going through every local authority website, looking at the PSPOs, writing down every information about the PSPOs that I could find. And that database kind of helped with my initial sampling and identifying areas. So this database exists. I believe other people have similar databases that aren't publicly available. But yeah, the database exists. And hopefully, if it's not incorporated into my ultimate research, I'll be able to do something with it and do something to help practice again. Because it seems a waste to waste something that I spent such a long time on, and that there seems to be an interest in.
And so tell me a little bit more about what's included in the database. What does it record?
So the database is kind of the whole lifespan of the PSPO. So it talks about, it'll talk about the local authority, the PSPO, the prohibitions and requirements, when they were introduced, when it expires, and then just a link to the PSPO. So it's kind of like your one-stop shop for all the PSPOs currently in operation. Although I haven't updated it in a while, so I wouldn't say currently in operation, but that I have been in operation at one point in time.
So I guess what might be really useful from that is for, if I was a officer in a local authority area that was thinking about a PSPO with a certain prohibition, then I could look to see whether there was another local authority that had used a similar prohibition, maybe see how they've worded it, or maybe make contact to discuss how they went around the consultation or kind of how they've implemented it. So again, it might help. I guess what I can see is it might help facilitate that kind of sharing of knowledge and information and experiences, perhaps.
Yes, definitely. I can definitely see why there's an interest in it, and it's why I'm keen to do something with it, either in my own research or a separate piece of research away from my doctoral studies. I'm really keen to do something to help practice because I can see why there's an interest there.
Fantastic. So just kind of coming to the end, really, I suppose I've got one final question. I know you're still quite early on in your research, but if you had to give any kind of practical advice to any listeners about any elements of the PSPO, is there anything that you would kind of encourage from a best practice point of view?
Aside from participating in my own research,
nice.
get the plug in there. I would say, I don't know if you'll agree, there's just a general lack of public awareness of the PSPO. So anything and everything to help increase the awareness of a PSPO is beneficial in my eyes, to kind of demystify it, to stop people perceiving that the old measures are still existing, that these new measures exist, and anything and everything to help bring the awareness to the PSPO, I can only see as a positive for PSPOs going forward.
It's really interesting you say that, because obviously I'm sat at home recording this, and as I look out my living room window, I can see a street lamp, and on that street lamp is a sign for a dog control order. So, yes, it's really interesting. I know. And I walked around a park recently in the West Midlands area, and I was with a friend who doesn't work in antisocial behaviour, and I was one of those geeks that just kept pointing out signage and going, well, that's not lawful anymore, because that refers to a DPPO, or that's not lawful anymore, that's a dog control order. So I think you raise a really interesting point, because I think there is still quite a lot of outdated signage, which I think, from a base level, raises the issue of residents not understanding, as you've pointed out. So there's still being this kind of confusion. And I think secondly as well, I think there is an opportunity for a bit of a defence if somebody was, told they'd breached a PSPO. Because I think the first thing I'd probably do is point at a sign and say, well, that refers to a dog control order. So I wasn't on notice of what I was supposed to be doing or what I was at risk of being guilty of doing.
No, definitely. I think the general public awareness of previous orders was so high that I think if we can reach even approaching that for the PSPO, that would be a great thing, especially as it targets all individual users of the public space.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's got to be an element of fairness, hasn't there? And it's only fair and right that if we are applying restrictions to areas, and as you say, that can come with some quite strong sanctions, the fair and right thing is to make sure that people are clear on what is expected of them.
No, definitely.
Absolutely. So that's lovely. I suppose the final question that might be ringing around in people's heads is, when might your research be ready? And I know that's quite a loaded question, because obviously it depends how long it takes you to a certain extent. But do you have any thoughts in your mind about kind of when there might be any further information available?
I am hoping, fingers crossed, that everything manages to get back on track. Hopefully I will be submitting around October 2021, so around that time. It might be a bit after if something happens that delays it any further, but hopefully just over a year or so from now it should be ready.
Fabulous. And I'm hoping that this experience hasn't been too painful, and that you might join me again for a podcast episode at that point, where we can talk a lot more about some of the findings and how maybe we start translating that into practice.
No, definitely. Happy to come on again. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you so much for giving up your time to be involved. And as I said, I'll make sure that your contact details are shared around when this episode goes live, so that people can make contact with you. And I think it's just quite important to say that if they do make contact, they're not promising to be part of the research. It's just an informal opportunity to find out a little bit more.
No, definitely.
But I will I will certainly share your details around. So thank you so much, Ben, for joining me. I really enjoyed that conversation, and hopefully listeners have also got some value from it as well. So that just leaves me really to thank you for dropping in and listening to this podcast episode. I hope you found it as useful as I have. Some really kind of interesting thoughts on kind of various elements of the PSPO, and hopefully some early kind of learning and some tips and practical guidance that you can perhaps take away and think around a little bit more. As always, if you have any suggestions for either topics that you'd like to see me covering or guests that you'd like to hear me talking to, I mean, certainly if you're sitting there thinking, oh, I'd love to be a guest, then please do let me know. I'm always looking for people who are brave enough to come along and chat to me. Otherwise, I will wish you all very well and speak to you very soon.